We've all heard about the problems in today's society, but what kind of truth do they actually hold? Here on the Ethan Experience, my goal is to decode everything that everyone claims. I won't accept any popular claims from either side until I am faced with numbers and facts from only reputable sources. Today's topic, do we still need feminism in 2018? Are men and women finally equal? I'm Ethan Fridley, and that's exactly what we're gonna find out. Feminism is defined as the advocacy of women's rights based on the equality of the sexes. Sounds great, right? Of course it does. Everyone should have equal rights and opportunities, regardless of things they can't control. Other than intelligence, I don't really want an idiot working on rocket ships or weapons of mass destruction. I digress. Feminism sounds great. Equality sounds great. But that raises the question, are we there yet? I took this question to heart and decided to investigate. But that left me with another problem. There are countries like Saudi Arabia and Nigeria where women would be stoned just for doing wrong. That's obviously not equal in the slightest, so I decided to only research feminism here in the United States, considering as how that's where I live and therefore the most relevant to me. I started off by learning all about feminism. At the very beginning of the investigation, I had a general understanding about feminist ideals and what feminism stood for, but I didn't really have a very in-depth sense about the history behind it. And that's where we begin. So far, there have been three waves of feminism, and we're currently in the fourth wave. I knew that back in time, feminists stood for different things, but I wasn't aware that there were multiple different defined time periods. Sticking with chronological order, I started my investigation with first-wave feminism. The first wave took place from the mid-1800s to the early 1950s. However, feminism started up much, much earlier than that. Just not in massive movements like this. Some of the advancements they made in this time period were gaining shared ownership of their children and, most notably, the right for women to vote. Then, from the 1960s all the way to the 1980s, the second wave happened. This wave fought for ideals like the issues of unequal pay, domestic violence, marital rape, creating rape crisis and women's shelters. The second wave brought around some new changes, like the FDA passing approval of consumable birth control in 1960, as well as Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prevented discrimination in the workplace based on sex. And finally, the Fair Wages Act of 1963. Later, in the early 80s, second wave feminism started focusing on issues like sexuality and pornography, which in turn led to the third wave of feminism. Third wave feminism happened from the 1990s to around the early 2010s. This wave focused on mainly gay and transgender rights. Probably the most important thing for this wave of feminism was the beginning of legalization of same-sex marriage, which started in one state in 2004, all the way to being legal in all 50 states. Now here we are in what is defined as the fourth wave of feminism. So what are they fighting for, right now? Well, after a decent amount of research, I found some issues. This wave is fighting to end issues like sexual harassment and assault, rape culture, and body shaming. Along with those, solving wage inequality is another big one. So I've done research, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everything I've found is correct. That led me to conduct an interview with my friend Andrew Glass, the most feminist guy you will ever meet. If you're wondering why I'm interviewing a guy and not a woman, the answer is simple. I cannot line one up. Many of the people I talked to about setting up a brief interview said no because they didn't believe in my topic, or they just couldn't get their schedule to work with it. Anyway, to the interview. Alrighty, I am here today joined by Andrew Glass.
Hello.
And I've got a couple questions for you.
Okay, hit me up.
So, the first question is about what the feminist movement is currently about. I've got a short list here, so tell me if any of these don't align with your views as a feminist.
Okay.
The ones that I have are LGBT rights, wage equality, street and workplace harassment, rape culture, and body shaming. Are any of those, do any of those not align with your views?
In what way? Mean? Am I against all of those?
Well, no, do you believe that...
I believe all of those are problems, yes.
All of those are problems.
Every single one.
Thank you. So, my next question is, are there any rights other than ones I've just listed, privileges or statistical advantages that men have over women?
Not necessarily that I can think of right now, but...
Okay.
I mean, just thousands of things.
Yeah. Are there any rights, privileges, or statistical advantages that women have over men?
I'd say there are. I'd say that it would never overcome the amount that men have over women, though.
Okay. So, you believe in the wage gap, right?
I do.
So why do you believe that men and women are paid differently? Is it sexism? Is it because they're believed to be less competent?
Well, I'd say more so the second than the first, because, I mean, sexism just means an overall hate of women. But the second more applies to, you don't believe women can do the same job a man can, which is absolutely not true, but it's just something that's so ingrained in many employers' mindsets that it's just something that keeps going on and on.
All right. Thank you for joining me, Andrew. It's been a pleasure having you.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Bye, Dad.
Let's start off with a big one, the wage gap. We've all heard about this, and this has even been taught to us in schools. We should accept it as fact, right? Well, no, we shouldn't. Because after an abundance of research, I've finally found out why men and women are paid differently. The short answer is, we're not. The 78-85% statistic that gets mentioned from time to time regarding the wage gap is taken completely out of context. My research eventually brought me to the U.S. Census Bureau, where I found the data regarding wage inequality. The spreadsheet shows the average earnings of full-time, year-round workers in the United States, organized by a number of different things. On average, men were paid $51,640, while women are only paid $41,554 as of 2016. This is where that 78-85% statistic comes from. When you calculate it out, women only make roughly 80% of what men make in a year. Okay, so there's the wage gap. It's been proven, right? Men make more than women? Not quite. Let's look a little deeper. If you remember, this is the average earnings of full-time, year-round workers in the United States. It is not a spreadsheet of the earnings of men and women in one singular workplace. Only the average earnings throughout the entire United States. Adding more statistics usually clears things up. This proposed wage gap does not take into account the different earnings of different jobs, which is the big one here. The top three most female-dominated jobs in the United States are elementary middle school teachers, registered nurses, and administrative assistants, earning $46,000, $68,000, and $35,000, respectively. Compare that to men, where the most common jobs are truck drivers, managers, and first-line supervisors of retail sales workers, which make $40,000, $99,000, and $48,000, respectively. Women are going for lower paid jobs than men on average. The average earnings also don't take into account the amount of hours worked. Yes, the data is for full-time jobs, but keep in mind that the hours for a full-time job can vary. According to the Bureau of Labor, the average hours per weekday for a woman on a full-time job was 8.2 hours, compared to the 8.9 hours average hours spent per weekday for a man. Once you bring weekends into the mix, the story stays the same. Yes, I admit, there was a very noticeable wage gap back when people truly believed that women were inferior beings to men. But all that became illegal when the Equal Pay Act of 1963 was passed, making it illegal to pay women differently based solely on their gender. So there you go. The wage gap is not based on sexism and discrimination. Rather, it is based on the choices of the sexes. In the original draft of my script, I wasn't planning on addressing the pink tax, but I felt that someone was going to say that I didn't bring it up because I know it's real. No, it's not. Women pay more for certain things like razors because there's more body to cover, considering that men usually just shave their faces, whereas women shave a much larger surface area. It's kind of the same story for the other big one mentioned in the pink tax, deodorant. Women pay more for certain kinds of deodorant because it doesn't smell like absolute trash. And also because there are more physical ingredients in it. If you ever look at the ingredients of a deodorant container, the list on the men's deodorant is much, much shorter than the one on the women's deodorant. There you go. A logical explanation of the pink tags. You're paying more for a better product. And there's also nothing stopping you from getting the men's version of something if you really want to save those extra 10 cents. Harassment and rape are horrible things. I'm sure that any rational human being can agree with that. But how common are they? Is harassment and rape really all that common in society? Well, the first thing you ought to know is that all of these harassment statistics should be taken with a grain of salt for what they define as sexual harassment. According to The Economist, the most common form of sexual harassment in the workplace is gender harassment, which encompasses, I kid you not, making misogynistic jokes.
Jokes!
For crying out loud, it's a joke! It's meant to be funny! Sure, go get offended by it, but just know that the definition of a joke is a matter that need not be taken very seriously. You know what? Screw it, let's just look at the statistics. Roughly 50% of all women will be sexually harassed in their working lives. But then again, 17% of those women have been harassed at least once in the last 5 years. Hearing an offensive joke once every 5 years is not something that needs to be fought about. Seriously, just put on your big boy girl non-conforming pants and deal with the joke. Now, yes, I understand that physical touching and abuse does take place in the workplace. I'm not blind by that, and I tend to view things from all different angles. But if that's happening, report it to the police and have them take care of it. Don't expect that freeing the nipple is going to solve all your problems. Then again, reporting false rape and sexual abuse has really started to take off. Not in a very good way, though. To be honest, I think it's great that these women are finally speaking out against being raped. They deserve help, I admit that. But once you get to false rape accusations, my gears really start grinding. And you know what? These statistics are awful for it. Studies show that between 2 and 10% of rape allegations are completely false. 10%! That's no small amount. Yet, this continues to happen. For men, when they're falsely accused of rape, they're typically expelled from their school, if they're currently enrolled in one, and they often lose their jobs and occasionally need to sell some of their assets to pay for legal fees to disprove these false claims. However, when a woman falsely accuses a man of rape, there are hardly any repercussions. And this so-called rape culture that the feminists keep bringing up is also completely absurd. People aren't being praised or accepted into anything for practically ruining someone else's, another human being's, life. There's no culture of rapists around other than those that enjoy dropping the soap in prison. Oh boy, now we're at another
big one.
Although, this issue doesn't butt its head everywhere like the wage gap does. This one is body shaming. I started off my adventure into this topic by looking at the most prevalent movement to eliminate body shaming, the fat acceptance movement. Let me just say that this movement really does not butter my croissant. It does the opposite, in fact. They eat my croissant before I can butter it. How insensitive. On a more serious note, I started my research into the fat acceptance movement. The purpose of the fat acceptance movement is to change the anti-fat bias and social attitudes towards the aesthetic and medical approaches to people whose bodies are fatter than normal. I hope you can see this isn't going to be pretty. After some more research, I found out that being fat should not be accepted as the new social norm. Mainly, because it isn't healthy in the least. Being overweight or obese is directly linked to a number of medical issues such as type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, kidney disease, pregnancy problems, and cancer! Of course, those aren't all the possible issues of packing a couple extra pounds. but those are much worse than being a healthy body weight. I understand that for some people, having a little bit more meat on them can be partially due to genetics, but there's a simple solution to not being overweight. If you really want to change it, maybe go to the gym once in a while and stop complaining that it's all genetic, because it's likely not. So medically, being fat is not a good thing, and therefore should not be seen as the new norm. And, you know, it's not good. Finally, time to get back to the original question at hand. Do we still need feminism here in 2018? Before we actually answer that, I just wanted to address that I know I didn't address the issues of the LGBT community, and that's because I completely agree with it, actually. Everyone should have equal opportunities to do whatever they want in life, no matter what they want to do in bed. If you want me to make a sequel that goes more in depth into the problems the LGBT community faces, I will. Okay, the question, do we still need feminism in the United States? After looking a little bit more into the facts presented to me, I can safely say that the feminist movement is no longer required other than giving equal rights to the people of the LGBT community. Everything else they're fighting for is completely irrelevant and either does not exist or should not be accepted due to health reasons. There you go. This big, long podcast for that short little conclusion. But I hope you can understand why I need to go so in-depth, so I'm not known as the skinny, straight, white male that spreads lies! Because, as you've found out, I don't. Everything I say is backed up with facts and evidence that has not been taken out of context. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Ethan Experience Podcast. If you have any questions that need answering, just pop them in the comments section, and I'd love to debate anyone that comes my way. Bye.